Radio Reverb. The Brighton Festivals now. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. On Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melita Dennett. It's Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Brighton Festival special. How many days have we been here? We're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeated 10pm and 9am the next day.
And the last time I looked, I was Rebecca Sandals. Hang on, checking. I am still Rebecca Sandals. And right through the festival, Melita and I will be looking behind the scenes, meeting some of the performers, creators and the people who make it happen. Today, Thursday, we're hearing about a black comedy with puppets, song, dance and a dead dog.
Yeah, okay, don't rub it in. We're also finding out about this year's City Reads book, and we're looking forward to a concert by internationally renowned musicians.
And much, much more here in the next hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
You know, it's all been so much of a blur. We are on Thursday, and I'm completely losing track of where we are on the festival. It's been such a fantastic, action-packed week so far. There's been some astonishingly good stuff on.
Exactly, and I think it's been an opening week that surpassed my expectations, because I wasn't sure of what to expect from Rockier and what was programmed, because I lack any knowledge around the themes and a lot of the performers, and I've been very, very pleasantly surprised, and I think there's a great vibe in town as well.
Definitely. And also, of course, this is the weekend of the invasion of the giant lanyards. It's the Great Escape, so at some points during the programme we will be touching on some of the Brighton artists you can catch at the Great Escape, but this is really all about the Brighton Festival and also City Reads, which is an annual event with a whole of Brighton and Hove becomes one humongous book group, all reading the same novel. This year, the book is Let Me Be Like Water. That's the debut novel by S.K. Perry. And it's not a spoiler to say it's an exploration of grief and healing. S.K. is going to be in conversation this Sunday at 5:30pm at Brighton and Hove High School. And Sarah Hutchings is the person who makes it happen every year. Sarah, welcome to Radio Reverb.
Thank you very much for having me.
14 years of City Reads. That's a lot of books. That's a lot of book groups.
A lot of books and a lot of book groups, yeah, and a lot of events. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, always very different choices of books. Some of them are set in Brighton. Mm-hmm. This is like Brighton Rock or My Policeman. Some aren't set in Brighton. Some of the authors are well known. Others are published for the first time. Some are local.
Yes.
Some are not. Now, this is a Brighton set book, this one. But how do you choose them each year?
Well, we normally we get publishers to submit books, so they will submit things that they think would make a good book group choice book, and then we look through the selection, and you know, we kind of decide, yeah, that looks like the sort of book we want to read. So we usually probably shortlist about 10 books, mm-hmm. and then we have readers, we all read them, and then we kind of mark them like you mark when you're doing an interview, really.
Do you get wined and dined by these publishers?
No. Gosh, no.
Well, I'm just you know, because
absolutely not. Honestly, the times have really changed in publishing. I mean, it's their budgets are tight now. So it's all, and they're very much looking to us to see what we can give to them as well, very much.
So do they, the recommendations they make to you, do they sort of compete with their own publications, or do they say this is our one from our publishers?
Oh, they do. Yeah, I mean, they want to know what, that we never tell the other submissions that have been put forward. We never reveal. Yeah.
So what was it particularly about Let Me Be Like Water that drew you to it? How did that one get from the long list to up to number one?
Well, I think there were lots of factors. I think the fact that it was set in Brighton definitely was a tick. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the thing is, there has to be more than that. But it is always a big, because we don't often get books that are set in Brighton. And do you know, apparently there aren't that many books written set in Brighton, the like contemporary books. It's a fact.
There's always
apparently.
Peter James. You can always fall back on him, rely on him for...
Moving swiftly on. Yeah, so basically there was that. We were really intrigued by her writing style, which I think it's a sort of style, it's either going to appeal or it's not going to appeal, but mm-hmm. I felt that it was quite strong. I found it quite interesting. I also personally really was moved by the story, and the people that have spoken to me, you know, City Readers have come up to talk to me, who've really loved the book. That's what everybody has said, very similar thing. And also, I think it, as I said earlier, it's quite unusual to write about grief from somebody so young. She's our youngest ever City Reads author.
She?
Yeah, she's 28 now, but when she started writing that book, she was 23, which is quite incredible, actually, I think. Yeah.
And it's a parallel text book. I mean, this doesn't give anything away,
no.
because you know that from page one, that she is looking back on the loss of her partner.
Yes.
And she comes to Brighton, and it moves to the season, so it starts in autumn.
Exactly, yeah.
Gets a little bit darker, and then the spring comes, and, you know, the sun comes out, and Brighton comes to life. So it's those two kind of time slip texts running in parallel. So it is quite an unusual approach to writing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think she's going to be on, so she might want to talk to you a little bit about why she chose that style. But I personally liked it, actually. I quite liked the chopping and changing. I quite enjoyed that. And normally when I read, but I think because I read a lot of books for City Reads, I try to just literally read them and not think too much about, oh, you know, like if I'm reading something personally, if it's just like, I'm very much like, oh, you know, 10 pages in, if I think, oh, I don't know about this. But if I'm reading for City Reads, I read in a slightly different way, I suppose because it's my job, but I feel I owe it to the selection. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that mean you enjoy reading it more when you read it like that or less?
Just different. Yeah, it's a different experience. I suppose in a sense, like when you're reading for a course or something like that, it's you're kind of reading with a slightly different head. I know that sounds weird. I can't put it in any other context than that. Do you know what?
I mean, it may be a tough read for some people as
I think it would be a tough read for some people. Interestingly, we've had a lot more younger people getting in contact with us this year. And I think maybe they do respond to the story because it is, as I say, because it is about somebody young who's experienced grief. Yeah,
and it doesn't shy away from adult themes, as you might call it. I mean, it's quite racy in places.
It's a little bit racy in places, isn't it? You know, I mean, it is set in Brighton after all. And
I unfortunately have only read about 30 pages. There has been racy sections already. You mentioned the sort of chopping and changing because it alternates. It's very, I mean, you wouldn't even call them chapters. It's kind of, but I suppose they are chapters, but they can sometimes be two or three paragraphs.
Yes.
And that then it swaps to the story, the here and now, and then it's looking back and it intertwines. And I'm sort of, my brain is obviously a little bit slow at kind of going, oh, it's changed again. Hang on. Oh, it's changed. I'm the kind of person that forgets when a team had changed half half time in football and struggles.
It's a style. She is a poet. And I actually think you can see that in the writing.
Well, what I found really strong so far is some of the ways that she describes feelings of grief, the sort of really physical, visceral kind of the sense of missing someone and loneliness and emptiness that you can feel with bereavement. So I think that has come very strongly. So I can only imagine it gets...
Yeah, I think all our readers really felt quite moved by the actual description of the relationship, her relationship with Sam, the partner that she's lost, so... Yeah.
And I think what you mentioned there as well about some of the chapters being very short. So like some of them are only a paragraph.
Yeah.
It does make it a very easy book to read because you can read a chunk of it and you can put it down and say, I'll come back to that later, rather than thinking, oh, goodness me, I've got to go to the end of a chapter.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That kind of bite-sized read makes it quite a book you can pretty well whiz through.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because we had a supper club last night because there's quite a lot of food stuff in the book. There's a lot about food and there's a lot of writing.
Yeah.
And S.K. Perry, she's actually really into cooking. It's one of her things she does as a sort of, you know... she loves food. So she was talking about that sort of therapeutic element to food. And interestingly, so we had a supper club last night. We did some recipe, like kind of themed around the book sort of thing. And a couple of people that came along said that they read it in one sitting. And she was there last night. And she said to them, I'm really pleased you said that because I kind of almost wanted it to be that, like read it all in one go. And actually almost like zoom, do you know what I mean? So it is a quick read. It's only 200 and something pages.
Just
I think
it
may
pages,
even be
yeah.
the shortest, the youngest and the youngest author and the shortest book.
Okay. I mean, what does it mean for a first-time author to be picked? It's a fantastic opportunity to bring your book to a massive audience. I'm sure
I think it is,
S.K. Perry quite appreciates it. We'll find out tomorrow because she's coming in, but you know.
Well, she's said to me she's absolutely overwhelmed and just loved it. And she decided to come to Brighton for the whole of the City Reads, which has been brilliant. She's come to every event.
Oh, great.
Yeah. It's been lovely.
So she's going to be speaking on Sunday, 5:30 at Brighton and Hove High School. What's going to be happening then?
She's going to be in conversation with Bridget Minimore, who's a wonderful speaker as well and a wonderful writer in her own right. And And so I think it'll be really interesting sort of dynamic. I think they kind of know each other from other events and, you know, stuff like that. So I think there'll be a nice dynamic between the two of them and some interesting conversation. I think obviously they'll take questions from the audience as well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So if people do want to take part in City Reads, it's not too late, is
it? No, absolutely not.
So the book's available from all good bookshops. I would say you go to your independent bookshops.
Am I allowed to say? Because it's on special offer in City Books.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Independent bookshop. There we go. So pick it up for your independent bookshop. Are there any other events happening? So if people, you know, they're listening to this and they think, oh, actually, I'm going to dip into that.
No, and Sunday is the last event. Look, okay. The last sort of the activities was the supper club last night. But Sunday, it's on at Brighton & Hove High School. It'll be great fun. So, I mean, I think, you know, Eve, you could read that book. Whoosh, and come and see her in conversation.
205 pages.
Yeah, there you go. 205 pages.
Well, Sarah Hutchings, thank you for joining us on Radio Reverb. Good luck.
Thank you for
with
having me.
With another 14 years of City Reads, we'll do all this again. I just think it's a phenomenal way to introduce people to new authors, new books,
yeah.
And new ways of reading books as well. So,
yeah, definitely.
May you boom.
Thank you.
You listen to Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sanders. Going to have a quick look over at one of the acts playing at The Great Escape. She's going to be playing around about 6:15, I think, or is it 7:15? Today on Thursday. Yes, it is Thursday. And she's a fantastic Brighton artist. She's going to be playing in New Road. And her name is La Lune, and the track is Heartstop. I just love what she does. From Brighton, that is La Lune, teamed up with Siva, a recent single that is called Heartstop. She's playing 6:30 today around Jubilee Street and New Road. So let us hope the weather holds for her. So we're going to be featuring a couple of the acts from Brighton playing at The Great Escape in the programme. Just to give us a little bit of breathing space from all the festival chaos. This is Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. It's the Brighton Festival Show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals.
And this weekend sees a world premiere at the Dome of a show commissioned by Brighton Festival and produced in partnership with Glyndebourne. Eye to Eye is essentially the story of a mother and child. It's the creation of writer and theatre maker Sheila Hill, and she worked from diaries and notes that she'd made 2 decades ago after she found herself craving music during her pregnancy back in 1998. The roller coaster journey of the first 7 years of motherhood form the foundation of Eye to Eye. The piece features a voice text, jazz interludes and 100 voice choir.
Eye to eye, nose to nose.
It started really 20 years ago when I was pregnant, and I felt I really needed music in a way that I'd never felt before.
The people coming to sing with us are from a real variety of backgrounds. There's one or two people that have trained as professional singers or sing in local choral societies, and some really have very little experience. Some of the adults have come along because their child is a keen singer and they've come as a parent to join their child. It's a really lovely thing for them to come together to be part of this project.
A lot of it was quite private and difficult, and I didn't feel I could really talk about it to anyone, so I wrote stuff down. And that's where the mother's voice started from. It was all written in real time, which is, we're talking 20 years ago. After my son Billy was born and started to talk, I found myself writing down things he said as well. The stuff that really made me laugh or moved me or shocked me. And that's where this work came from, the two voices, the mother and the child.
I've tried to find the kids who you like and I like and like you with pain.
and Eye to Eye is at Brighton Dome this Saturday at 7:30pm. And again, it's on Sunday at 2:30pm. In tomorrow's show, we'll be meeting the creator Sheila Hill and some of the participants in the production.
Now, what I really like about the Brighton Festival is it introduces you to all sorts of different people that you've never ever come across before. I have to say, I have never before heard Slow Moving Cloud. They are playing on Friday the 24th at the Old Market, and they sound absolutely remarkable. If you've not heard them, and this is your first chance, then wrap your ears around this. It's breathtaking. I think that is rather fabulous. That's Slow Moving Clouds. They're playing Friday the 24th of May at the Old Market in Hove. I really like that mixture of Nordic and Irish vibes there, and that kind of almost from Orcadian from the Orkneys, which is all kind of all mashed up together, I suppose, with the Gaelic as well.
That was rather lovely, I
thought.
Yeah,
really nice, really nice.
Now,
yeah.
If that or anything else that we talk about takes your fancy and you think, what was that? What were we talking about? What were they saying? Check out details on brightonfestival.org. That's where you're find the listings, more information on shows, some videos and explanations of shows, and also you can find out if tickets are available for the show that you're interested in.
And one of the musical highlights this weekend is the Acca Trio. They're coming to All Saints Church in Hove. Slipstream's Mark Johnson got on the phone to guitarist Antonio Fortione to find out what's in store.
One of the gigs I'm really looking forward to seeing this year's festival is the Acca Trio. Joining me is Antonio Fortione playing with Seku Kaita and Adriano Adweli. A fantastic night of music at the All Saints Church in Brighton on Saturday the 11th of May. Antonio, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Antonio, are you looking forward to playing down here as part of the festival?
I am looking forward to playing down in Brighton. Always a beautiful hot spot for me, and I used to play quite a lot in Brighton for many years. But this time it's going to be slightly different. I'm going to play with two amazing musicians and great friends, Seku and Adriano, very talented. This is a trio. We decided to get together because we're really having fun together. These three of us, while we are rehearsing, we're taking little breaks and playing football, cooking. we're having so much fun. And it's like three little boys almost going back to childhood, having that sort of fun.
Excellent. I'm just going to take you back to your earlier career, because you're born in southern Italy. And you came to London quite an early age, but before that you were in a band since you were 13, and you busked, didn't you, at Covent Garden?
After my jazz studies and after I finished I had a diploma in art, thought of leaving Italy because for some reason I felt quite restricted there. And as I said, I'm kind of a restless soul, and I do like exploring things. And I thought it was about time for me to just to see what's happening outside my country. When I moved in 1983 and came to London, I couldn't speak a word of English. Can you imagine? I mean, the only way of surviving and making money and paying my rent was by immediately going to play somewhere. And the obvious thing, was Covent Garden. And that's where I made my living for the bar. It was quite tough because meanwhile, I just bought a really bad secondhand television and I had it on all day long without understanding a word. Slowly, word after word, and with the dictionary, looking at the dictionary while, taking a double-decker bus.
Yeah.
Tried to understand my way through. I had not much time to go. I tried to go to school, but then there wasn't much time because I had to play about 6 hours to earn my living.
Yeah, of course.
Every day.
Yeah, it's good. So you were in Cuba making a documentary. Can you tell us any more about that? Or is that?
Yes, this is an interesting secret thing. In Cuba, I've been going for about 4 years now. When I went there, I saw literally my childhood. I remember the kids, the streets, the smell of petrol, the cars, everything was so reminiscent for me. When I came back to London, people were asking me, so can you tell us about Cuba? They wanted to know. And I was lucky enough to find people financing the idea I had, going to Cuba and interview singer-songwriters.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
They're called Trovadores. It was the most amazing experience because I've met really well-known people and people that are almost homeless. But they all writing songs and telling stories. So I'm in Cuba interviewing these amazing storytellers,
yeah,
and they all play wonderful songs. So I'm putting this together with my lovely daughter, Maya. She does editing. I guess mid-June should be ready.
Fantastic. I look forward to seeing that. Antonio, it's been absolutely great talking to you. Just remind the listener that Antonio with Seku Kaita and Adriano Adwelli will be playing at the All Saints Church on Saturday the 11th of May. It's going to be an absolute corker of a show, and get yourself a ticket, get yourself down there. Antonio, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
That one is going to be a cracker. That's Aka Trio. That's guitarist Antonio Forcione talking to Mark Johnson about their gig on Saturday at All Saints in Hove. It's sold out, but as we always say, it's always worth checking for returns. And have a look at Brighton Festival's Twitter account as well, Brightfest, because they often put up information about last-minute tickets there. But as Rebecca was saying earlier, do go and check out the website, brightonfestival.org, and you'll find all the details about tickets on there. And let's have a look at what's coming up over the course of this weekend. Friday, there's some poetry happening. Jacob Samlerose presents Unseen Mentor. He's an influential writer who presents a trio of his poet mentees. That's taking place at the Basement from 7:30.
Let's dip into some children's entertainment. We've got the Curissa. We heard from the creators of Curissa yesterday. It's a piece for 3 to 6-year-olds, which combines dance, projections, music and animation, loosely based around themes from Alice in Wonderland. And that's at the Bright Helm Centre from Friday through to Monday. And there are 3 performances a day.
Now, we've been pondering on this one, actually, because Friday evening at the Dome, John Ronson exploring the curious world of porn. This is a new show based on his podcasts, promising new stories, never heard audio, and some very strange PG-rated porn clips.
So there you go. That's what Melita and I do when the records are playing and we sit there and the mic's down and we ponder on porn.
We do.
I don't think so, Melita.
No. Anyway, there are still tickets available for that. So if you want to catch John Ronson talking about porn at Brighton Dome, I think they will never again have the chance to experience that. That's taking place on Friday night. And again, this is the place to go.
For more listings, go to brightonfestival.org. Listen on demand to exclusive reviews and previews at radioreverb.com. Radio Reverb. The sound of your city.
Okie dokie dokie, going back to the Great Escape, playing Friday evening. This is Brighton's Bobby Johnson and Bang. Yeah, that's Bobby Johnson and Bangs playing Friday evening at The Great Escape. Lots of great Brighton talent. Loads of free gigs happening during The Great Escape. So, but of course, there is a Brighton Festival. And we did officially declare that today was Dead Dog Day.
Yeah, Dead Dog in a Suitcase and Other Love Songs is a story of corruption, betrayal, murder and greed, all shot through with dark humour. It features puppetry, song and a decaying Punch and Judy tent, along with a serial killer on the loose. It's a 21st century take on John Gay's 1728 Beggar's Opera.
All taking place at Brighton's Theatre Royal, and I went there earlier to meet 2 of the cast.
I'm Dominic Marsh and I play McKeith in this show.
I'm Angela Hardy and I play Polly Peachum.
So Knee High are known for your adaptations of classics, but giving them a massive twist. You've done Brief Encounter, Rebecca, Tristan and Isolde before, many more. Is Dead Dog part of that Knee High tradition?
I suppose it is, in that it adopts a lot of the things that people who are familiar with Knee High work would expect, which is exciting theatre that dares to surprise and do things differently, and theatre that's great fun.
I think with this, you've got the kind of classic John Gay music, but then you've got, you know, it's kind of mavericks like Charles Hazlewood and Mike Shepherd and Carl Gross behind the steering wheel. So then what they do is they kind of take something very traditional and then completely flip it on its head and give it new life and new energy and this kind of magical, shocking, adventurous piece. So yeah, I think it does. I think it gives it a very, very new twist, but with traditional themes running throughout it as well.
Now, you opened last night, yeah. And it was tremendously funny. You're getting people to laugh at the end of the world, basically.
Yeah, I know. I think it's that classic way of when something's, you're up against it, sometimes the only thing you can do is laugh. But no, we've got, I mean, it's brilliant actors in this company who, you know, are just incredibly well experienced with their comedy timing. So, I mean, the writing's fabulous. So, yeah, it's great fun as well. Though it was a very dark piece. It's a dark comedy. So you're in for a good night. You're in for probably tears, laughter, and a very interesting end, I'd say.
We're standing here in the Theatre Royal at the moment. I'm looking up at the stage. So there is scaffolding. There's a whole array of guitars. Mm. I can see a lute there. It looks like a rather scabby Punch and Judy box and a rather startling noose. Yeah. Hanging in the middle of the stage. Tell me how this set actually works when the actors are performing on it.
Well, it's funny, when Michael Vale designed this set, I think they had chats about it being a sort of playground that we could all run around on, and it sort of is that, really. It's there's all these sort of iron girders up the back, and the Punch and Judy thing that gives it a sort of, and the slide that gives it this sort of faded, jaded end of the pier show feel, and yet we've got this big pole that we love coming up and down. Well, actually not up. Don't go up anymore. I think I tried that once. It's great. It's very unforgiving. There's a lot of metal there. As the bump on my ankle will testify to from last night. Yeah, no, it's great, though. It can transform into lots of many different things.
And puppets play a big part in it. I can see a cage of some rather sinister-looking puppets over there.
Indeed. Well, you've got Sarah Wright at the helm of that, and she's, you know, world-class puppeteer. And her detail is extraordinary. You're sitting backstage or you're on stage with her and she's working Punch, Judy, the babies. I mean, there's so many puppets in this, you can't actually list them all, to be honest. And her detail and her focus is just extraordinary. So she brings them to life. I mean, you forget she's there. That's how good she is at her job. So
there are times when some of the performers have solo spotlit performances. How much leeway were the performers given to develop those?
I think it was all developed in a very generous way. I mean, it wasn't prescriptive. That's the way Nihai works. So there's all kinds of things that didn't make the final cut, but that's part of the joy of devising a show. I think it's one of my favourite things about this show is at various points, at one point you're a rock star in a concert, at another point you're in a Noel Coward witty wordplay moment, you know, and then there's these sort of, you know, then there's a big Shakespeare Act 5 at the end, you know, there's all kinds of different things that happen in it that is lovely as an actor to have the opportunity to do all of that within one show.
And it kind of crosses time boundaries because obviously John Gay's opera was 18th century and you have nods now to 21st century environmental crisis.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what's great about this piece is that when I first did it 3 years ago, it felt incredibly relevant in, you know, in the way of the world. And now it's even more so. It was wonderful, actually. We got this text yesterday from our friend who used to do it last time. He was the drummer. And he said, you know, it's thunder for a heavy heart. And I think that's exactly what this is. You know, it's absolutely relevant. It's defiant. It's right. You know, it's kind of screaming against the darkness, really. So I think it gives a voice to something that actually a lot of people are angry about. You turn on the news and, you know, you're either depressed or you're angry about something, depending on which, you know, viewpoint you're coming from. So yeah, everyone's going to get something from it, whichever way they look at it.
And Nihai, no strangers to the Brighton Festival. Is there something special about coming and performing in Brighton, especially in this beautiful theatre?
It's a lovely week, isn't it? And to be, it's a week for us, month for you. Yeah, it's great. This is a gorgeous theatre and I wish they made theatres like this now. It's fantastic. I was lucky enough to do Tristan and Isolde with Nihai here 2 years ago and it was amazing. A little bit warmer than it is this week as well. But that brings its own challenges as you melt on stage. But no, it's great. It's a lovely place to be. It's always that frustration when you're at a festival as well because you're working. So you can't take in as much of the stuff as you want to.
That was Dominic Marsh and Angela Hardy talking about Dead Dog in a Suitcase and other love songs. Oh, stop it. Behave. Put it away. Howling there in the background. Dead Dog in a Suitcase and other love songs at the Theatre Royal. Tonight runs through to Saturday and Rebecca went to see it.
So just come outside the Theatre Royal. The first performance of
Dead Dog in a Suitcase has just finished, and I'm with Ali J, who's sitting beside me. How did you find it?
Oh, well, that was great, Rebecca, wasn't it? What a full stage. So there's a lot of actors on that stage who are all very talented. They're playing instruments, they're acting, they're singing, they're dancing, and what a lot of chaos. I've never seen so much chaos. The set's amazing. You're on a building site, then there's a dead dog leaping out at you, and then there's somebody with his penis out, and you just don't know where to look.
There was, as you say, so much going on. And I found at times it was like being at some sort of rock concert, and other times of sort of losing their mind, shouting and singing and very raucous, but then quiet, calm moments. And the use of Punch and Judy featuring throughout, what did you think of that and the puppetry?
Well, yes, the Punch and Judy bit of domestic violence there for you. But I think more so was all the puppetry. There was loads of great interactions with all the cast members, all the different types of puppets. And I think one of the things that really brought home to me was actually you're not watching the end of the world, really, aren't you? And that's always a bit depressing, but they made light of it.
They did. I kept thinking, I'm laughing here and people are dying, people are being lied to, cheated on, people are being just wicked, and then there'd be a sort of laugh. And I feel discombobulated out here.
Discombobulated is a word. And of course, corrupt police. It was like watching Line of Duty in the Dark Ages.
Anyway, Ali, I'm going to let you go home and think about the end of the world as we've just experienced it at the Theatre Royal. Thanks very much.
Bring it all down.
Line of Duty for the Dark Ages. She's a character, isn't she? Where'd you find her? Sat next to you. Yeah, well, I honestly, this sounds fantastic. I didn't go and see it, but you went to see it last night, and you were raving to me about this earlier. We are quite harsh and critical about
things.
Yeah,
and I expected not to enjoy it, I have to tell you, because A, I've got a bad back and it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So I thought, I don't know if I'm going to be able to last 2.5 hours sitting. And at the interval, I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. This is... And B, it... realistically, in the first 10-15 minutes, I was hesitant because there's a bit of the old, old Harry Higgins, what's his name?
Yeah,
My Fair Lady,
whatever, yes, yeah.
Singing sing-along-y style.
Yeah.
And then I just went with it, and it got better and better. And quite often, 2.5 hour productions, when it comes to the second act, you're thinking, well, you're filling now. But it just kept giving more, and it was fabulous. It really was. I mean, and if you were getting a bit bored, there were, which you wouldn't have been, I would add, there were bangs and noises aplenty to wake you up from your seat.
And I looked at the set, obviously I went down there and I interviewed Dominic and Angela there today. That set looked absolutely astonishing. So it's a kind of Mad Max type set with the pole that they described that poor Dominic bashed his ankle on. The slide, the really manky Punch and Judy tent. It looked really creative, really incredible.
It was, and I think they mentioned it was a chap called Michael Vale that did that, and, you know, hats off. It worked really well in the space. And as soon as I went into the theatre and looked at it, I thought, this is a great set design for a touring company that uses a space. And they're up and down. It's like a Meccano set, you know, as far as they're sort of climbing up it. The puppets appear at different points and down, and they're sliding down the slide, and with sort of comedy, farce alongside the tragedy, because there is a horrendous brutality in it, but it's done in a really, really clever way. And I had concerns over, you know, that theme. I'm not a big fan of violence. I'm not a big fan.
Some people are massive fans of violence.
No, it's a form of entertainment,
yeah,
sort
right.
of like horror, okay. thriller, you know, things that, you know, bloody. I'm not a fan. But there, the blood is red tissue, red material.
Okay.
So it's just so clever, yeah. So it's another great recommendation from me.
So I think this might be one of those ones that people look at in the programme and thinking, like, yikes, is that going to be for me? But you would say, absolutely, absolutely go for it. Yeah, fantastic.
I would recommend it with abandon. It is very loud at times, so
okay.
if you're not a big, I mean, there are, they literally are grabbing megaphones and
Thanks, Rebecca.
So that sort of thing, which I loved. It was like Throbbing Gristle. Do you remember Throbbing Gristle
how could
from
I forget
back in the day?
Gristle,
yeah, so there was a bit of that going on at times, yeah.
Okay, well, that is Dead Dog in a Suitcase, and that is taking place at the... Thank you! At the Theatre Royal, runs tonight through to Saturday. How many stars?
Out of how many?
Let's say out of five.
I'd say another four, yeah.
Okay, fine. Right, there we go. So go and see that. So if you're looking at that in the programme and you're wondering, Rebecca says go. There we are. Let's have a little bit more music from The Great Escape. Playing Saturday night at the Old Market. This is Brighton's Our Girl. Yeah, Brighton's brilliant Our Girl playing Saturday night at the Old Market as part of The Great Escape. Listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. We are here throughout the Brighton Festival bringing you the inside track on what's going on. So we'll go and see things and we'll tell you what you should see as well. We'll be hearing from a lot of the producers, the artists, the creators, the people working behind the scenes at the festival. And tomorrow I'm going to be popping down to meet some of the participants in Eye to Eye. We heard about Eye to Eye earlier, and also its creator, Sheila Hill. Tomorrow as well, we're going to be hearing from S.K. Perry. We were talking about S.K. Perry earlier. She's the City Reads author, and her book is Let Me Be Like Water, and we were talking to Sarah Hutchings earlier in the programme from City Reads. Sarah's going to be in... S.K. is going to be in conversation this coming Sunday, 5:30 at Brighton Hove High School. She's going to be in the studio with us tomorrow. Let's look forward to other things that are coming up, because there's a great programme of things coming up next week.
Absolutely. We're also tomorrow hopefully going to get some people from Without Walls. That's the free entertainment on the seafront. There's several performances going on, and we're sort of toing and froing working out who we can interview and whether they can come in and where and what. But
fingers
hopefully more
on
Without Walls, which is this Saturday at beach level near the I-360 from 11 till 8 p.m. I believe.
This is the nature of live radio. We never know what's going to happen from one day to the next. I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to seeing next week is Backbone. That's at the Dome, runs Wednesday to Friday, an Australian physical theatre stroke circus troupe. Now I love the stuff that the Australians bring here. I mean, every year they come here and they do some stuff in the festival, and it's absolutely astounding physical act. So, you know, if it says circus in it, it's not clowns running around, it's astonishing physical performances. I haven't seen this particular troupe before, but I'm really looking forward to Backbone.
I think there may be a video of this on the Dome Festival Dome website.
Let's have a look at that. I've said one of my highlights last year as well was the Australian combo who performed with the Indonesian trio. That was a real kind of sleeper hit for the festival last year.
That was fabulous. That was absolutely fabulous. So
I think if anyone's Australian and they're doing physical theatre, go and see them, because they're always going to be marvellous.
What a great filter that is.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
If they're Australian, they're going to be good.
Well, I would say if they're a theatre company called Berlin and they're from Belgium, they're going to be good, because what I'm really looking forward to, and as soon as I saw the programme, I thought, oh, great, Berlin are back, is this company who they're performing at the Attenborough Centre Thursday 23rd of May through Sunday 26th, and it's a piece called True Copy. Now this is a UK premiere, and it's the story of a forger, and one of probably, it says, and I'm reading now from the what do we call this? The
programme. It's called a
programme. Festival programme. Probably one of the most successful art forgers in the world, who forged works of Picasso, Dali, Matisse and Hockney, and had a 20-year career fooling the art world. And so this piece is based on his story. And normally, have you seen Berlin?
I have seen Berlin, and I would absolutely zoom off and see them again, definitely.
So they normally, it's a kind of multimedia mix. I believe this is actually in Flemish, the first language of this production, and it might be subtitled. I'm not entirely sure, but I think it may be. In any case, their work that I've seen previously has had subtitles, which I sort of like squirm at and go, oh, but it still works because it's fabulous. So I haven't seen it yet.
They always do something which is really interesting and which really challenges your preconceptions. Technologically, they're extremely clever as well, because they always use a phenomenal technological jiggery pokery to do what they do, like multi-video screens and things like that.
Who doesn't like a bit of jiggery pokery?
Oh, we all like technological jiggery pokery, don't we? Of course, the moon is coming.
The moon
is coming to Queen's Park.
We... Yeah, we keep, I think it's about every, approximately, I would say, every 70 minutes since we've started doing this programme, someone has mentioned the moon coming and we've not had details on it. Have we managed to get hold of Luke Jerram?
I am trying to dig out the moon people for an interview next week.
The moon man from the moon.
The moon man. I'm trying to get the man in the moon for next week, yes. Yep.
So we want to find out a bit about this mind-boggling, detailed NASA imagery on the lunar surface that will be hovering over Queen's Park for a weekend. So when we've got more detail, other than it looks like it's going to be fabulous, then we will share.
We will let you know. And also, Chili Gonzalez is coming to the Dome, Brighton Festival
Monday.
I
don't know Chili Gonzalez. Tell me more.
I like him, actually, because I think he's got his 2000 album, Gonzalez Uberalis, which he teams up with Peaches on that one. He does lots of collaborations. Jarvis Cocker, Daft Punk, loads of different people. And he's essentially a pianist, but he's a bit of a prankster as well. He's a Canadian performance artist, currently living in Germany. And it's going to be piano works that he's doing. And I had an interview with him, which we'll be playing out on Monday. I might even give you a sneaky little preview of that one tomorrow. I'm not here tomorrow. Whispering Mark Johnson is along with you, Rebecca, but I will see if I can chip-chop that up and pop it into the programme for tomorrow, just to give you a little teaser of Gonzalez on Monday.
You're too kind.
But he's
performing at the Dome on Monday evening.
Yes,
right.
Yes. So, Storytelling Army was an addition to the Brighton Festival catalogue back in 2017. It was fantastic as well. For 2019, the theme is food and flavours that people have experienced, stories of where they come from, places they've been, or the places they dream to taste. Whether sung or live music or simply spoken, those lucky enough to be going will hear recollections of plight, grief, happiness, joy and perseverance. Steph O'Driscoll is artistic director at Nabokov. That's the company which first created this fabulous army 2 years ago.
When Kate Tempest got asked to be the curator for Brighton Festival, her main kind of ethos was about making the arts more social and less elite, and making sure that stories were made by and were taken to people that the festival hasn't reached before, and like taking work into different communities. And we share the same ideals, really. So she asked Nabokov to head up some of the community work that's taking place at Brighton Festival. Then really we took that idea and morphed it into the Storytelling Army.
The beautiful thing about Nabokov and Storytelling Army is the fact that, you know, they have a unique way of bringing everyone together without trying. Make us all realise that whilst everyone's telling their stories, you know, we've all got like different circumstances to how, you know, we've been living our lives. Everyone's story is different. But when the stories get told, it literally like gives people like me a better understanding of where you're coming from. Inja came down, Chester P came down, those big names literally like pop into the workshops and literally just give us a bit of their wisdom about how to construct a story. And literally just tell it in such a way that's so compelling. It's really inspiring.
I think it's so important for projects like the Storytelling Army to exist, because people like me definitely need both the platform and the structure that gave me to sort of motivate me. We've had a few workshops in different spaces with kind of different aims, like some to spew some ideas and to kind of chat to each other about our goals for the piece or our ideas for pieces. We also had older people from Cascade Creative Recovery, so we had a mix of age and a mix of backgrounds kind of all coming together.
And I've been interested in writing for a while. Everyone's got a story. Everyone can tell it. It's about being creative. What I've definitely had empowerment in doing it.
It means a lot, actually, because I've been writing poetry for years, and a lot of my friends said, you need to share what you've done and your work and get it out there. And basically what I've done is kept it to myself and I've never read it out.
I've never done anything like this before in my life, in actual fact. It took me a few weeks to get into it, but that was all good, and Steph never once made it an uncomfortable experience or anything like that. It was always a very welcoming and a good vibe, really, and I'm very proud to be a part of it, really.
So the Storytelling Army will pop up all over Brighton, whether that's on a top deck of a bus, on the pier, in the pavilion gardens, in different public spaces, but the hope really that if we share our stories, then hopefully people will understand each other and have empathy for one another, that they will be able to plug out of their everyday and plug into this story, to humanity, to people sharing, to people connecting to one another.
Storytelling Army performers and Steph O'Driscoll there from Nabokov, and their performance at Brighton's Queen's Park on the 18th is sold out. There's details of how to book for the performance taking place at Worthing Pavilion on the 19th on the Brighton Festival website, brightonfestival.org.
Now that's all we've got time for today's Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and howling Rebecca Sandals here. You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2. I had to do one more then, Melita, sorry. Thanks. 97.2 FM, DAB and online, and we'll be doing the festival show again Monday to Friday, 5 to 6pm, and we repeat at 10pm and 9am the next day.
Thank you to today's guests, Dominic Marsh, Angela Hardy, Antonio Forcioni, Sarah Hutchings, reporter Mark Johnson, and our cheerful reviewer, Ali J. I'm Melita Dennett. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and the Brighton Festival special show will be back at the same time tomorrow
with Rebecca and Mark Johnson. I'm going to play you out with Orchards from Brighton. They are playing Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Prince Albert as part of the Great Escape. From me, Melita and Rebecca, see you tomorrow. Bye.